Willkommen zu dieser
Welcome.
216. Ausgabe
This
von
is
Europe
our
Calling. Ich habe mir das
216th,
gesucht, nämlich die unsere heutigen
Europe
Gäste, die
Calling
Nicole
Webinar. I would
und
like to
die
welcome
Rebecca Hoffmann.
our
Mein Name ist
speakers.
Maximilian Fries.
You can
Ich
see them
bin
here. I'm
Gründer
going
von
to
Europe
introduce them in a
Calling
minute. My
und
name is Maximilian
bin
Fries. I'm the
Gründer dieser
Managing
Veranstaltung.
Director
Danke,
of
dass ihr
Europe
da seid. Heute
Calling,
Abend sind wir
and
heute
I
hier
am your
ganz vielen
facilitator
Studenten
tonight.
aus der
And this webinar
Zivilgesellschaft,
is part of
Wissenschaft.
our
Vor 2
series, Part of the
Jahren haben wir
People.
Stellen
And for
hier
2 years
zu der
now, we've
Gründerinnen
been
und der
asking the
Zivildemokratie
question, how can we
stärken
strengthen
können,
the
insbesondere
voice
im
of
Kontext
citizens in our
Ehrkreises,
European democracy,
Studierendenversammlung haben wir
together with experts, etc.?
Zusammenkongresse, haben wir
So, we've got,
Hausarbeit
for instance, the
gemacht.
European
Nicht
People's
hier, sondern das
Assembly,
Thema
but
behandeln
that's
wir
not our
zivile
topic tonight.
Gesellschaft
The
und der
topic
Demokratie
tonight
und
is
die
civil
Verhandlungen, über die wir
society and
heute
democracy
reden,
and a
die werden
specific
verlaufen
campaign
gegenseitig
against
gesellschaftlich
European
unterstützen, der
civil
persönlichen
society,
Entscheidungen natürlich
which is, of course,
diametral ablehnen. Und deswegen sind wir heute hier, deswegen sind wir hier bei
sort
Calling for the People
of
und
damaging
der
to
Mut
our
ist der
goal of
Kraft gibt.
strengthening
Das ist
the
der
people's
Kontext.
voice. And we're going to talk
Bevor wir
about the how
einsteigen,
and why of
ein
this
paar
campaign
Details.
tonight. But
Ich
just
spreche
some
heute vor allem Deutsch.
organizational
Damit zu
remarks
verstehen, haben wir heute wieder
before
zwei
we
wunderbare
start.
Dolmetscherinnen.
It's going to
Die
be mostly
Dolmetschung ist
German
zunächst
today,
zuständig für die
tonight, and
Korrektur
in
dieses
order for you to
Wortlautes.
understand everything, we have two
Genau,
great interpreters for
Englisch.
you.
Da sehe ich den
You'll
Monitor
find the
hier.
interpreting
So,
function
welcome to this Calling
when you click on the little
16
globe in the control
Europe
panel.
Calling Webinar. Today we will speak mainly German. If you need English translation, please check out the little globe in the control panel and choose English. Wie immer bei Europe Calling könnt ihr eure Fragen stellen
As
und ganz
always,
wichtig, die
during Europe
Fragen der
Calling,
anderen bewerten.
you
Wir sind
can
nämlich
ask your own
heute
questions
über
and vote on
2000
other people's
Menschen,
questions,
2200
which is important
Anmeldungen haben wir
because we
jetzt.
have over
Insofern macht es Sinn, nicht zu
2000
viele Fragen auf
registrations
einmal zu
tonight,
stellen.
so it's
Dafür braucht
impossible
ihr
to
eine
answer
Zeit,
every
mehr
single
zu üben,
question.
um
So we need to
noch besser
know
zu werden.
which questions are the most
Wichtig,
burning
wenn ihr
ones,
eine
the most
Frage habt,
interesting
schreibt eine
ones
Anmerkung
for
hin, dann
everyone.
versuche ich, sie
And
nachher zu
please
beantworten.
tell us your name as well, so I
Diejenigen,
don't
die
have to
Fragen
repeat
stellen, können
anonymous
mich bitte
user.
anrufen.
And I'm going to
Wir haben
post
heute
the
eine
link
Gästin
for
aus der
Slido for the
Zivilgesellschaft
questions in
von
the
Nordhorn
chat.
und der
We've
AI.
also got
Der hat sich einen
Stefan
Namen
Conrad
gefallen
from
aus.
If
Das machen
AI
wir heute mal
tonight,
zum ersten Mal
using an
ausprobiert.
AI tool to evaluate your
Ganz oft die
questions.
Fragen ja
We've
festgestellt
tried
werden
that
in
before
verschiedenen
because
Panelen und da wollen
sometimes
wir
the
mit Ihnen
questions
arbeiten,
that come in
um
last
Zukünftige
are sort
Bewegungen
of
zu zu
overlooked by
helfen,
everyone else,
jedenfalls
and that's why we're
möglicherweise
using AI to make sure that that
zu
doesn't happen. So
helfen.
thank you,
Wie
Stefan,
immer,
for
am
your
kompletten
support.
Wochenende wird Europe Calling aufgezeichnet
And of
und
course,
danach
this
online
session will
auf
be
YouTube
recorded
als
as
Podcast
always and will
gestellt
be
und
put
veröffentlicht.
online as a podcast on YouTube. So you
Das
should
war
be
schon
aware
die
of that when you ask
Hausmitteilung. Jetzt geht's
questions.
los. Ich darf als
Let's
erstes begrüßen
start.
Patricia Heidegger. Sie ist
First,
Stellvertreterin der
Patricia Heidegger.
Stellvertretenden
She
European
is the
Environment
Deputy
Bureau,
Secretary General
EEB,
of the
die
European
europäische
Environmental Bureau, the
Nachbarschaftsorganisation und
EEB, the
die
European Umbrella
Umwelt-NGO,
Organization of over 185 environmental and climate NGOs.
Wenn ihr zu dem Thema eine
And
Frage
the
habt, die ihr
recommendation
gerne
for her
wissen
was,
möchtet,
if you
dann
want
schreibt
somebody
Patricia.
on this
Also,
topic who
Patricia,
knows every
wir
aspect of
warten mit
it,
den großen
ask
Fragen auf dir.
Patricia.
Das
So,
Gebäude ist jetzt das Wort.
expectations are high,
Frau
Patricia. You've
Heidegger,
got the
Sie
floor.
lehren und für die einen
Thank you
Salopp
very
und
much,
wow, was für ein Publikum,
Max.
1000 Leute,
Well,
das ist
that's a lot
ja,
of
ich
people,
freue mich, dass so
1,000
viele das
people
Thema
already. I'm
interessieren.
happy
Also,
that so many
es geht ja heute
of
um
you are interested in the topic.
den
So
Angriff
tonight
auf
we're talking about
NGO-Finanzierung,
the
wie
attack
gerade eben
on
die
NGO
Vorsitzende der
financing that we're
Umweltkommission
witnessing.
die
So
nächsten
mainly environmental
Streit
organizations,
sozusagen in der
but
Warteschlange
the
für
next
Vereinbarungen
targets
bzw.
are
erzählen,
already
was ist hier gerade
in
los,
sight.
was ist der
So
Kontext,
let's start
was
with
geht eigentlich beim Leitkonflikt,
the question,
was
what
steckt
is
dahinter?
happening? What's the background?
Also die
What are
Tatsache,
the
dass immer
reasons?
wieder
So
Politiker bestimmter
again
Couleur
and
die
again,
Finanzierung von
certain
NGOs in
politicians
Frage
of
stellen, das ist ja
certain
keine neue
groups
Geschichte.
talking
Der unbeglichen
wondering about
Einbindung
the
der Umwelt von
financing of
regelmäßig
NGOs.
öffentlich
That's not
Frage
news.
oder Frage gestellt
And
wird, das auch zu spüren bekommt. Und in Europa gibt es immer wieder Versuche,
in Europe
kritische
again and
NGOs
again,
durch Einstreichung von Geldern
there are
zu
attempts
klein zu kriegen
to
oder zumindest
cancel
kleiner
funding
zu
for
machen, als
critical
Parteien.
NGOs or keep them
Was jetzt
small, keep
wichtig ist,
them
ist wirklich der aktuelle
weak, let's say.
Kontext, der sogenannte
And
Skandal
now
um
we've
die
got
interne
a specific background,
Umweltorganisation,
the so-called
der tatsächlich
scandal,
wirklich in politischer Isolation
European money
Ressourcen
for
verschwendet.
environmental
Kontext
organizations. It's not
steht im
disconnected from
Zusammenhang
the
mit dem
political
Rollback, den
context,
wir
but you
erleben
have to
in Bezug
see
auf
that
Umwelt,
in
Flüchtlinge,
connection
aber auch
with
die
the
Antwort auf
rollback of
Flüchtlingskrise,
progressive policies,
Gerechtigkeit,
environment,
Umweltpolitik.
social justice,
Im Vordergrund steht im Moment
integration policies,
Wettbewerbsfähigkeit,
etc.
Fairness,
So
ja, die Interessen
now
von
it is just about a
NGOs, Jobs first, Kapital,
competitiveness
einheitliche
first,
Regulierung, das sind die
raw
Schlagwörter,
materials,
die wir finden im
simplification,
Zeitalter der
deregulation, Those are the mottos today. And we have a situation of political polarization, often blaming environmental policies for all our woes. We've also talked about the tech bro oligarchy lately, so there are some conspiracy theories as well. So civil society in Europe everywhere has it hard at the moment. There are punitive new laws, for instance, in Slovakia and Hungary, that's nothing new, but also funding is scrapped or reduced, for instance, in Sweden, in the Netherlands as well. They used to be very generous with global civil society or their own civil society, and that's changing now, and let's not even mention the US. So let's start explaining the LIFE program. The LIFE program is a program for NGOs to apply for operating grants to the Commission to help with their organizational costs. And for environmental NGOs, these grants will be financed via the LIFE program. For other types of NGOs, there are other programs. So the LIFE program is much more than just the operating grants. It's the most important program in Europe for climate and the environment. In this funding period, there's 5.4 billion euros in the LIFE program. Most of that money will be directly, will go directly into projects. So, I mean, if you've visited a nature conservation park, you've probably seen the LIFE logo explaining why this was financed, etc. So this money is for municipalities, nature conservation areas, sometimes companies, associations, etc. So 15.6 million euros from that, out of that whole budget of 5.4 billion, are to support different European networking organizations. So, for instance, the organization I work for, the EEB, trying to lobby for environmental policies. We have lots and lots of member organizations, hundreds of them in all European countries. So we are one of the recipients. And the idea of such grants, we don't just have them for environmental organizations, but also for human rights, democracy networks, etc., transparency, NGOs. So the idea is that organizations representing citizens' interests should have access to the political decision-making process, and that costs money. And you need this money in order to provide a counterweight to the heavyweights from industry, etc., because industrial associations, just to give you an example, the 50 largest companies, just the 50 largest, not the associations, have spent more than 200 million euros for lobbying at the European level. For instance, the chemical lobby has spent 44 million, and just one association for the chemical industry, just one. So we need this counterweight for the political work in order to participate in the European political decision-making process. And ever since the 90s, Commission and Council and the Parliament have confirmed this again and again, this necessity. But now, and it was sort of visible since November, there has been a heated debate in the budget control group in the Parliament, in the committee. Specifically, some MEPs from the German EPP group, the CDU-CSU parties in Germany, trying to make this out to be a scandal that NGOs, green NGOs, receive funding. So they say there are secret contracts between environmental NGOs and the Commission in order to lobby the European Parliament in the way that the Commission wants it. So there has been a lot of disinformation in the past about this, and one of the first statements was that we are not in the transparency register of the Parliament. But of course, that's not true. The NGOs were the first ones to accept this register long before it was mandatory. And now in January, the debate has escalated further. There was a debate in the plenary, and some have gone even further in their statements, saying that the Commission is bought NGOs to push the Green Deal through in the European Parliament. And one group even said that Frans Timmermans had come up with this plan. There were lots of there was a lot of disinformation. One MEP spoke about 2 billion euros that allegedly have been spent on this. And so that sort of is saying that the European Commission was corrupt and buying NGOs to work for them, lobby for them, and such misinformation, etc., has of course been distributed in the press. So there have been over 100 articles, etc. So what's the topic? Is it transparency? What's this really about? So those who were spreading this wrong narrative of what NGOs say, that it is about the distribution of powers and transparency, but especially for NGOs, transparency rules are very strict. We have stricter rules than other interest groups. Maybe we'll get to that later. And for these operating grants, there is a regulation, a law, there's a public call, a tender. There is no political influencing of our work program. There is no negotiation with the Commission or anyone else about our contracts for the grants. The amounts we receive are public, our work programs are public, our annual reports are public, our donors are public, and I don't think there's any problem with the distribution of powers. Yes, we receive this funding to be able to lobby, but we use this to talk to everyone, the executive, the judicative, the legislative, every part of the administration, and the MEPs that receive our letters and are invited are still independent. They receive information from us, from other NGOs, and they can deal with that however they want. So I don't believe that these MEPs are worried about transparency or the grants, but they just their interest is really what role should we be allowed to play in the democratic decision-making process. And my last remark for this debate, a quote from the draft report in the Budget Control Committee from the rapporteur. She says, and I'm quoting roughly, "The reputation of the European Parliament as a directly elected institution has to be protected. NGOs with an activist agenda trying to influence the decision-making process by sending amendment proposals, etc., are damaging this reputation. The Parliament has to distinguish between professional activists and volunteers. The European Parliament should sanction NGOs which are trying to manipulate the decision-making process." So, I mean, so far on transparency, reading that, I think it sounds like an autocratic system. They believe that there should not be any talks between citizens and elected politicians, and that critical voices are not the core of democracy, but a burden, something annoying. So they don't describe these critical voices as a normality, but as something wrong. So only MEPs should work, and volunteers, they should work. So those who have time after their normal working life as a farmer or as a nurse, etc., to discuss with MEPs, they can still be heard because they're just volunteers, but not any NGOs. So over the last few years, we've worked with the media and some critical MEPs to shed light on this and correct the narrative a little bit, but still, I believe that there is a major risk here. This is just the start of a debate for the next 5 years, and there are attempts to adopt an NGO law. There are proposals for that. And then they talk about not just transparency, but even money laundering to regulate NGOs more stricter. at the European level. We've seen that in France before, where they tried to block civil society. So I think it's time that we wake up and fight for a strong civil society in Europe. Critical civil society. Thank you, Patricia. Very strong. Yeah, let's try to wake up, and that's how we'll continue. I'm going to continue with Dr. Raphael Weiland. He's the head of the NABU, head of the EU Office of the Nature and Biodiversity Conservation Union, one of the oldest German environmental NGOs, over 900,000 members. The NABU is very old. The word NGO didn't even exist when the NABU started. So they represent their members' interests and the nature conservation interests, and Dr. Raphael Weiland can maybe talk to us from the point of view of the NABU in order to see what all this means for the work of NABU. Raphael, great to have you here.
Thank you
very much for the invitation, and I'm delighted to see this great interest in this topic. It is indeed a very important topic. What we see and what we feel is that something is going on, not only because we are well placed in Brussels, but we also know differences at the national level. We are not allowed to use the live operational grants because we're only registered at the national level and not at the EU level, but we are in the fortunate position to receive enough donations by simply canvassing supporters in the market squares, for example. But at the same time, we do notice that something is changing, something is going on, perhaps through the media reporting from the EU level, but also here in Germany. And I would like to direct your perspective to Germany now, and I can give you three examples, perhaps.
So.
Right.
Genau, und zwar viel von euch haben es
many
ja
of you may have noticed over the past few years and the past weeks that things are happening in Germany. It was quite exciting, actually, to the left-hand side. The non-profit character ATTAC is being portrayed here, but CAMPACT also was given a hard time, and then others also. This debate has been recurring. For NABU, at the federal level, it was also questioned whether we are not for profit. We have been questioned countlessly about the non-profitability of our activities, and we really feel the impact. The second example was derived from the last election campaign. Friedrich Merz really slashed out at NABU at the time already, and there is a quote that has been used also by Söder, and he said that the NGOs are less important than democracy. And Mr. Kubicki of the Federal Liberal Party also echoed that. And on the right-hand side, you may have seen that in the social media on Saturday, we were very happy to see huge, massive protest in Munich. And then the media simply asked the question, who's behind those massive demonstrations and protests? Is it not perhaps a federal ministry or funds from taxpayers' income? Which was questioned because some political groups are not so happy about what's taking place in the country. As a national association, we of course ask ourselves why this all of this is happening. Patricia was already mentioning how it came about. She explained very well that since November, the CDU and the CSU pushed for the questioning, telling people out there that the reputation of the European Union was at stake. And I asked myself, well, what's that got to do with this? Because we as an NGOs are a very positive part of the reputation of the European Union. We had talks during the pandemic, for example. We talked about a strategic ways forward. We have actually portrayed the EU content in our own campaigns, and not only once. So we were quite instrumental in supporting the policy. And you can also find full information, full transparency on meetings with representatives of the Commission, for example. And all of this is just an example of our participation in processes that strengthen democratic life, the democracy in itself. That's exactly what the European Commission wants. The EU Have Your Say website is quite hilarious, actually, because it's full of very dry information. But the European Union is interested in consultations for national restoration plans, for example, and we support all these initiatives. To be honest, when somebody portrays us as gaining power, then quite frankly, if you look at the number of meetings that we have and who we met, we haven't met Ms. von der Leyen in the past 10 years. For example, our associations don't reach out to the heavyweights in the Commission. But look at the BDI, for example, the Association of German Industry. They don't hold back in meeting such powerful people. You will probably know our campaign for the European elections. We chose an otter, depicted it with a European EU T-shirt, just simply to make sure that nature and the environment don't get lost in the political life of the European Union. We support the European Union and the institutions, and these are the examples that I wanted to share with you. So this is why we're quite puzzled. We simply don't understand why the MEPs now claim that we are a danger. And the last point I would like to make is the following. We really need the networks. We need the central associations, the overarching associations active at the European level. We feel that Europe really is very important in taking forward new legislation, and we can't do that all by ourselves at the national level. Now, Patricia knows very well that I really like the General Assemblies, where we talk about the statutes and where everything is made to be perfectly transparent. We don't only need the national associations, but also the transnational level. And we have also written to Ursula von der Leyen last week as NABU and said that that she should immediately stop the revising of the grant agreements, for example, because we need a strong civil civil society in the new era. Thank you.
Vielen Dank.
Thank you very much, Raphael. Thank you for your perspective. I think we have already received a few questions. Before I give the floor to the next speaker, I would like to put a question to you, to Patricia, and to yourself. Perhaps we could be a little more concrete. Because allegedly, lobbying is all bad, the lobbying that you're doing. Where did it have a positive impact? What are we really talking about? That would be interesting. Raphael, you mentioned it, but Patricia could perhaps also share her experience. In your view, what are the successes in the environmental policy and the climate policy, for example? The successes, I would rather say, well, what did not work? In the past legislative period, quite a number of new environmental legislation, pieces of legislation, and nature restoration laws were passed. There was this restorative move. Climate change and on the protection of the environment. And now we feel there's a backlash, as if it was too much, as if we had moved forward too much, although we are still very, very far away from where we need to be and where we need to get to. So that's why I said in my intervention, it was a partial question, really, but it's also an existential question, how to go about financing of NGOs. Because if we now start to deregulate, if we want to simplify legislation, to water down those laws that were passed only in the last legislature, then we are worried. And this is also combined with a new political attitude where the civil society, which can be quite annoying, perhaps, because we are noisy, we do write many letters, and that's something that you simply have to be able to accept as a politician. But they seem to be really upset, and they should understand that the critical voices of democracy are so important. Raphael, would you like to add something? Well, perhaps one sentence. Over the past year, the past years, really, we really fought for the nature restoration law. We worked both technically on it, but also in the media, because we thought that it was an important piece of legislation, something concrete outside the Green Deal, really. But many things were withdrawn. The CO2 reduction objectives, for example, the EPP didn't want to hear of it, although it would have been very important for the general health. So talking about a super left Green Deal, well, it's not too bad, but we arrived at that result due to the NGOs. Yes, I think we can look at it even more concretely, because there are three topics which have repeatedly been looked at by the MEPs who were very critical and also quite hostile. They talked about trade policy, for example. They said that it jeopardizes free trade. But the question is, are those free trade deals good for the human being and the nature? Then the agricultural policy, that is immensely critical. They see a lot of red flags. They warn against NGOs that bring claims or Yes, complaints to court.
Thanks
very much for orienting us so well. And now we'll move on to Nina, and she'll be talking on the regulation. She's with Lobby Control and has been on the board of Europe Calling. I'm very happy to see her here tonight, and I think that she brought a presentation along. So we're looking forward to her presenting her topic. Thanks very much.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm going to do. Well, unfortunately, I am unable to share my screen with my slides. I'm embarrassed to say. Well, it would be great if you could do it for me. That would be really helpful. And I'd just tell you when to change to the next slide, just like we did in the good old times with the Beamer.
Yeah. Ich bin total froh, dass wir heute Abend alle miteinander
overhead
reden.
Projector.
Dass,
so yes, I'm really glad that we have this topic tonight and that Max initiated this, because I believe you're right. We have to talk about this. It's important for us to get together and think about how to deal with this topic. Some things will be a repetition, some of the things I'm going to say, because I do believe that this is the beginning, only the beginning of a campaign that's still on the rise, and it's coming to Germany. You can see this article from the Bild, the German newspaper Bild. It's not an article written by the CDU, but, well, conservative media are also participating in this campaign. So let me just show you that campaigns against the NGOs are just part of the CDU's toolbox. It's been part and parcel of their toolbox for a long time. And usually they talk about transparency and funding for NGOs. Patricia has talked about this before. They just want to weaken their political opponents. That's the ultimate goal. And I would like to talk about, of course, we can counter these arguments, but they're still really dangerous. What can we do about this? So this is nothing new. Let's continue to the next slide. 2017, Markus Pieper, a CDU member of parliament, has tabled a motion targeting funding for NGOs. And many other CDU members were unhappy about NGO successes and the discussions about trade agreements like TTIP, CETA, etc. There were lots of demonstrations. TTIP never became a reality, but that was more due to Donald Trump. But, well, the CDU is unhappy about civil society having successes in important topics and moving public opinion, whether on climate or on trade policy. So NGOs are now a political opponent for the CDU. So the motion of Markus Pieper was meant to make sure that NGOs cannot receive any funding if they're against some sort of red line that was very vague the CDU tried to set, whether in security policy or other things. They said it has to do with democratic principles, such NGOs should not receive any funding any longer. So basically it sounded like muzzling the NGOs, and this motion was not carried, so he had to retreat it. And so I would like to thank parties in the European Parliament and in the German Parliament but I'm mostly active at the European level, who are always on our side. That's important and it's right, because without, well, the Greens and the SPD, but above all the Greens and also the left, the motion might have had success. So it was very important that they helped us. Let's continue on to the next slide. So, Raphael talked about this topic already, the right for associations to bring complaints court. The German Environmental Help took their own measurements for air pollutants, for nitrogens. Nitrates. And so the CDU did not like this. They did not want to make companies pay for the diesel scandal. They wanted to take associations' right to bring complaints away. Well, that wasn't successful either, but more on that later. Then 2022, there was the so-called Qatar Gate. The EU Parliament, I'm sure you've heard about it, several MEPs were detained in Brussels. It was a major scandal because they were found with suitcases full of money, cash, apparently. Well, nobody has actually been found guilty, but yeah, suitcases of cash from Qatar, Morocco, and a third country, full of bribes in order to help these countries' image. So there was a fake NGO working for this, founded by a former MEP, and of course they did not try to follow the rules for NGOs, and the CDU then just said, okay, we're going to, they avoided most of the damaging things for them, but they made it a huge scandal saying that NGOs were not transparent at all and were just working with third parties, and so they tried to use that scandal for a law against NGOs without any concrete successes at this point, but it is a catastrophe because NGOs are already much more transparent than many other organizations. Patricia and Raphael already mentioned it, that especially NGOs have been working for such as transparency registers for years, and they have to name their most important donors in the register. Economic associations don't have to do that. So we do have transparency in our field. So there's always this narrative that NGOs don't do this or don't do that, which is simply not true. Next slide. So the CDU is working against NGOs and trying to really make that NGOs are trying to determine policies against the interests of the public. And they're saying it's not appropriate to the kind of influence that NGOs wield. It's always the same type of argument. NGOs are not just transparent. They want all these transparency rules specifically for NGOs, but these rules should apply to all types of organizations, use of the funding, members, etc., donors. Well, even things like money laundering, even such accusations are now being thrown about. Really, the kind of problem that former politicians then join an NGO, that's not really a problem because the NGOs don't have the money to hire a former politician. So the revolving door principle is not really a problem. So they're saying NGOs are not less transparent, they're saying they're infiltrated by vested interests, and they're saying NGOs should not be financed from tax revenues because that means that we have conflicts of interest, that they're no longer independent, and they can use them can be used and wielded like a weapon. So all of these three points are wrong. And I'd like to explain again why. NGOs organize and coordinate civic engagement and contribute to political political life. So that's a very important function in a pluralistic democracy. And Patricia also said it, that sometimes parties which have a tendency to autocratic tendencies don't like this, but of course, if you want a pluralistic society that includes everyone, and there is an imbalance in representing certain interests at the political level, because like Patricia said, companies have so much more money, they have leverage, they can threaten to leave the country or the region, they can threaten to cancel jobs, etc. So a figure that was named 200 million euros spent by the five largest companies. I mean, compare that to the 15 millions that NGOs, environmental NGOs, have received as operating grants. I mean, just compare that. That's the reason why we have these operating grants, to even stand a chance. And the CDU explicitly also supports other organizations representing their interests. And I really don't understand how this is possible, and I would like to hear your opinion why the Commission has given in here. I don't understand that. Why has the Commission conceded and said, yes, this is damaging the EU's reputation? They've never used to give in, but now all of a sudden they're saying, yes, organizations are not allowed to actively use the money to lobbying. And I just don't understand why the EU Commission is acting this way. That's maybe an aspect for discussion here.
In the beginning,
I said that I was worried. And I would like to show you why. Because the attacks are getting fiercer. Friedrich Merz, Raphael mentioned him, and the quote that NGOs are supposed to be anti-democratic. And this is what he said during an election campaign event, saying that environmental organizations are really business enterprises. So that they're all always trying to stop everything by complaining. So Mr. Merz will certainly not have our back. And in the CDU election program, it says that for infrastructure measures, there should not be the right to bring complaints to court. And then the EPP continues to demand an NGO law that's part of their work program at the European level. In many countries now, member states, the EU, we have much more power for right-wing parties, and they have the same opinion as the CDU. And so autocratic regimes like the Orban government or Trump can inspire the CDU in this, and so they're trying to push through rules to
Das hat wirklich was von Orban.
make it so that NGOs can no longer claim to be working for the general good or for the public interest. So there seems to be a general campaign that's gaining traction. So right-wing parties are learning from each other how to get this done. So they would just attack grants for NGOs, not for any other organizations. Was that a misunderstanding, or did they learn from some other party how to do this, how to get away with it? So I have lots of question marks here. And I also thought about what could be done, and I would like to discuss this with everyone here. Nina, maybe we could do that at the end. So that we can talk about this with everyone. Thank you. Let's just keep our timetable.
Geben, die ich sehr spannend fand, weil du ja das auch gesagt hast.
Just one more question. I mean, you said it, there are different yardsticks for transparency. So,
warum sind denn diese Netzwerke,
it was a question,
gefragt,
why
so, so intransparent, ja?
Are NGOs networks so, also ist, Gefühl, not transparent? So maybe this is something that we should shed some light on. In the German discussion, a lot of people, also with Patrick Reichenbach, that things are not really clean. And could you maybe talk about this and talk about what the communication is like here?
It's certainly interesting to look at the EU and the German Transparency Register. You'll see all the environmental NGOs, all the development aid NGOs, all of them. And you also find out who funds them. You definitely can find that out by looking at the register. And you can also find out how they spend it. So NGOs are not intransparent. That's just being portrayed by others. Obviously, there are still many problems with transparency of organizations. That's something that Brussels always argues. And I feel that the CDU, and mostly them, but others also, they use these arguments, and they perhaps also use the fears and the hesitations in the general public about not being so sure about the NGOs by simply putting the whole blame on the NGOs. But if you look, for example, who were the ones that lobbied for the authoritarian regimes? Not the NGOs. It was in the main some law firms. But nobody talks about them. Nobody talks about other lobby entities. They all talk about the NGOs only. It's a generalization, and the world has become so complicated, and the CDU simply points its finger at the NGOs. Thank you very much. That was very important. And we would now like to turn our attention to the EU Parliament. It looks like an incumbent news broadcasting. I'm sure that you know the two representatives that will be talking to us in a minute. René was our Mr. Brexit at the time in Europe, calling because he always talked about that. He was very knowledgeable about that. And in principle, I think it's a topic that is actually quite closely connected. But we will go by the alphabet, and we will first call upon Daniel Freund to share his views. He's the German member in the European Parliament from the constituency of Aachen, and he was an anti-corruption expert at Transparency International. And Daniel knows very well about lobbyists. I don't know whether the fossil fuel lobbyists are still as active as they were in my time. I hope you can hear as well, Max. I have never been given a fuel canister, but I remember very well my time at Transparency International, and when this first report of Markus Pieper came out against the TTIP NGOs, I met him. And I met him together with one of his friends from the Hungarian Fidesz. And I still remember that because it was one of the worst meetings I ever had as an NGO representative with any one politician. The level of disinformation and the view of the civil society has only worsened since. Every 5 years, they made an effort to come out with a report on the worst NGOs. And in the past, you could simply vote it down. You could simply tell them it's all nonsense, what you're saying here. But since the last European elections, we have lost the progressive majority of the Social Democrats, the Liberals, and the Left, and the Greens, and now we have the Conservative parties in the majority with the right-wing and far-right groups. And it really has become dangerous because some of these thoughts and reports could be voted with a majority of these new right-wing votes. Things that we've seen in the United States and in Hungary, these dirt campaigns, they will not be the only thing. They will simply repeatedly say, we have problems with transparency in Qatargate. They used money laundering, for example, and they used dishonest means of financing certain campaigns. And if you, once you have discredited them, you can tap on the funding and you can limit the funding and you can select those who you don't like. And you can support those who you like very well. So if you cut off the funds of those you don't like and you use the funds for different means, then you can go a long way by simply limiting the activity of good NGOs, and you can simply even destroy them in the long run. It is really very, very dangerous what we're seeing nowadays, because it is important for a healthy and diverse democracy. Even the LIFE program funding is extremely important. We have the Consumer Protection Associations, we have the trade unions, we have industry, the representatives of big corporations like Business Europe, and NGOs, they all equally receive funding from the Commission. And it is a very weird argument that they are putting forward. The European Commission would be downright stupid in believing that only the NGOs should be cut off from funding channels. We've seen the debate in the European Parliament. A huge number of NGO agreements have been requested to scrutinize them, and the chairperson of the Budgetary Control A commission wants to have a very close look at this. Certainly, the grant agreements with Transparency International that contributed hugely to dismantling the attack. Monika Hohlmeier, the number two in the Budgetary Control Committee, has her own contacts and contracts with NGOs defending certain interests. And I think we really need to turn our attention to the next development. And we need a very close cooperation between all of us, because I feel and I fear that it won't go away just like that. We need a public protest. We need to question the background of the arguments. And we will certainly need to discuss very harshly with the Conservatives and beyond, because if the funding is cut, then we'll all have great difficulties, and we should discuss that tonight. Thanks very much, Daniel. I will now move from the sixth biggest to the second biggest group in Parliament. Well, thank you very much. René Repasi has already been introduced. Professor Dr. Repasi, I'm not so sure about your status. You had a professorship in European law, and you started working at the European Parliament for the S&D group, and you're the Speaker of the SPD European Parliamentary Group, and you've been re-elected, and I look forward to your contribution to this webinar. And it's interesting to hear your views. So thanks very much.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. You mentioned our size in the European Parliament, not after the German elections in the German Parliament. So let's not talk about that. So always happy to be here. 2021, that's when I started in the journalist bubble. I was very surprised that I am a member of the Social Democrat Party, because I was so often a guest for Europe Calling. They thought I was a member of the Green Party. So, yes, indeed, it's like Groundhog Day. We know the story, 2017, Daniel mentioned it. And I saw this in the debate 23 when I was MEP. So if you look at the Instagram, their speech that was clicked on the most was the speech that I gave in the Parliament that against Markus Pieper and his accusations. But now we have Monika Hohlmeier, and it's kind of the same thing. I need to. I can agree with other experts just said that this is the context of the debate, but one aspect is very important here. So when we talk about freedom, we have a party that says we have to have freedom from all things, but that's not the right approach. We also need the freedom to do things, not just to be free of things. And that's been part of our law since 1949, because the state has the task and the obligation, I believe, to finance non-governmental organizations, then that's the only way that we can have the freedom to do things, because we have, otherwise we have a very one-sided representation of interests. It's already the fact that they're very one-sided. I'm used to be an IMCO delegate, now I'm also a member of the Industrial Committee and other committees, and it's just crazy the amount of lobbying requests and papers that receive. I was rapporteur in Econ on the role of financial services for the supply chain law. So just to compare the amount of papers that we receive from NGOs against the amount of papers from the industry, it was crazy. So much more from industry. So the impression is that we're in our bubble. So if the same argument comes from 100 associations, then we suddenly believe, oh, it must be true. We've heard it so often. And that's why it's important to have organizations representing interest, talking to members of the parliament, but then they have to have the same amount of power, the same amount of money, let's say, or similar, because otherwise the debate will be skewed. So it is a public duty to finance NGOs so that we have a certain balance in organizations representing certain interests. And that's what the Commission, the European Commission, did. And I believe that if you use the classic definition of freedom, that was completely correct. I don't think that is really the topic here. So, as you mentioned, I used to be a sort of scientist, a researcher, and I was financed by EU funding programs. So you could say the EU Commission funded my opinion education, and now I represent that opinion in the parliament. But if you've ever tried to get funding from the Commission and filled in the application, I mean, if you, then you know how difficult it is. And the Commission, as the funding organization, sometimes is a little bit too detailed. But the only scandal here is that the Commission suddenly forgets about their public duty to finance NGOs, and then overregulates the rules for such NGOs. So part of the autonomy of such NGOs, of course, is to be able to lobby, to influence the political decision-making process. Everyone does it. Researchers, scientists, the academic community, everybody tries to influence the political decision-making process. So the entire discussion has to be looked at against this backdrop. So Daniel mentioned as well, if we lose funding for NGOs, then many of them will actually have to stop working, or they'll have to use private donors. And then, of course, they can either register their donor and make that public, right, but then they can be accused of being under the donor's influence. So if you want to make sure that NGOs really act in the public interest, then you have to fund them publicly. So there's not an unequal treatment of non-NGOs and private interests. And nobody really talks about the fact that in the financing areas, we have financing organizations that have 6-7-digit figures in order to influence commission members. And NGOs don't have that kind of money. So, I mean, when I have received mass emails, of course, it's not very... I'm annoyed as well. And then if it's the 1,000th email, I'll be too annoyed to even read it or to vote in that way. But everything for the basis and of this campaign has already been said in the previous four presentations. So it's about the basic duty of the European Commission or so in Germany. So then the right to bring complaints to court, which has been mentioned a couple of times for associations. There are some things going wrong in the debate because there's the material law that the CDU doesn't like, and they're then mixing that up with the actual right to bring complaints. Like if you win for court, then the judge has made a certain decision on the basis of the material law. So if the CDU doesn't like that, then they have to change the material law, not the right of NGOs to use that law. So now on the political consequences, from the point of view of the SPD, it's clear that we have to continue to defend public funding for NGOs, and we have to correct the narrative and defend against these arguments. But, of course, majorities have changed. And that's another thing that we have to influence. But, I mean, I haven't given up hope completely for the CDU, because some of the CDU members also understand democracy in the same way and understand that NGOs are part of the way a democracy functions. And that is good if they're publicly funded, because then you know where the money comes from. And it's not some private donor where you maybe don't know who is funding their lobbyism. So these are the arguments for the general public, and we will use all our political weight in order to make sure that this campaign goes nowhere. But this energy, we will have to use a lot of energy to fight this. Thank you. That was a great conclusion. So you've asked many, many questions, and Stefan has tried to sort these questions in the background. A lot of you wanted to know about specific measures. What can citizens do now? But we'll talk about that at the very end. Let's start with the questions that you voted up. I'm going to just ask a question and address it to one or two of you of the panel, and then you can raise your hand if you want to also say something, but the two MEPs, you can just wave and I'm going to see you. I think that's the way we're going to do it. So, thank you for your questions. Let's look at Slido. I think we can connect the first two questions. Markus, that's the top question. Who are the German MPs distribute these fake news that NGOs should be banned? Who's paying them? And then Lutz Pahl builds on that. Or no, let's not connect these two questions. Let's just start with Markus's question, but I'm going to read out two more questions. So Lutz asked, what about the connections between KKR, KKR, Springer, etc.? the public broadcaster ZDF. Why don't we talk about these connections more publicly? He's a member of the Green Party. Why don't we fight back that way? And then Ursula Brinkmann asked, what's the reason why paid activists may not do lobbying, but the industrial lobbyists are also paid for it and are allowed to continue to do so? So these are the three questions. And Markus's question, Daniel, you already mentioned Monika Hohlmeier. So who else is arguing in the same vein? Daniel. Well, most of the discussion is happening in the Budget Control Committee. So the committee that's responsible for looking at the way the EU spends money and whether it's been spent the same way. And we have this discharge for the budget every year in order to certify that the Commission has spent the money correctly, let's say. So that's where the discussion is taking place at the moment. So I'd say the German members of the committee, the German EPP members, so Monika Hohlmeier, Nicolas Herbst, the chair of the committee, but then, of course, the discussion continues in the plenary. So then all the delegates for the EPP could be candidates that he could try to influence in order to rethink their position and point out to them that this actually endangers all organizations which receive EU funding. And maybe these MEPs are not really aware of that at the moment. So in the past, it was Christian Development Organizations, Caritas, Brot für die Welt. They are maybe good partners for this because they have access to these EPP delegates, because environmental or transparency NGOs knocking on their doors and asking for a meeting will not get the meeting. After what Markus Söder said, well, that he doesn't want to hear from religious organizations either, that might not be the best way anyway. So, Nina, the connections between lobbyist organizations, Springer, FDP, KKR, what are those? I mean, Springer, the publishing house, is known to most, but what's KKR? KKR is a major investor for the Bild newspaper, a major investor, maybe the biggest one. So they invest a lot in fossil lobbying as well. And you'll remember
the
heating law that was adopted in the German parliament, and the Bild, the newspaper, was very active then. So maybe that was due to the investor KKR, because they stood to lose some money. This is a question that we've asked in the past. I think it's good to ask this question, but we don't have any proof that this is the case. It's just an open question. There's no proof. But you could also say that the Bild newspaper has a lot of connections to powerful conservative figures. That's just their background, the conservative part. And so that's maybe just their opinion, genuinely. We don't know. It's important to ask the question, but we can't prove it.
So,
I mean, I don't want to attack the media, but over the last few weeks, I've tried to interest some journalists in the topic, and I wasn't very successful. Maybe because that's not a very hot topic in Germany at the moment, but my impression is that some topics just sell better than others, and also
konservativere Medien gibt und
There
dass
are
die
many media outlets that are more conservative and they just don't want to talk about this at all.
Jetzt hören wir dich gerade nicht mehr.
Ah, ich habe eine Hand
ja, also,
von
Raphael.
Super, genau. Ja, ist super. Ich glaube auch diese
yes.
allgemeine, das Mediendesinteresse für diese zivilgesellschaftlichen Themen.
The disinterest of the media for the civil society topics is confirmed. I really don't think that this is a media campaign. I think it's rather a campaign that's been driven by political parties, or it's even a political initiative of theirs. You can see that by simply looking at the critical comments by Politico, for example, which is also closely connected with the Springer publishing house, and some others are simply not reporting on the developments very fact-based. I think it is a CDU, a union-wide campaign.
Dankeschön. Dann
Thanks very much.
Will ich, bevor wir von oben weitermachen,
Before we go on,
noch mal was fragen, beziehungsweise das
I have another question. And is also connected with a question that I have almost lost. Walter raised the question, and you have briefly mentioned it. The environmental NGOs, the politics need to become more active in order to limit the environmental NGOs in their activities. So that is something that we also feel in more general terms as the push of limiting the field of activity of NGOs in political life. And some of the environmental NGOs have heavily criticized these moves, and they've been disconnected from funding. So is that a valid reproach? What about the right to bring collective action? Why is this such a huge topic now? How do you react as an environmental NGO if you're being blocked? Perhaps Patricia would like to take that question. Yes, I'm happy to start, but perhaps Raphael can add to that because I'm not really the expert in this field. We really work a lot in the area of environmental law, the right to participation, the right to access courts in environmental issues, but I'm not so familiar with the German situation. Rafa probably knows that much better. So we look at it at the European level, and what we find is that we have an almost a bigger problem with the subject of planning processes, infrastructure development projects, because the authorities don't have the necessary resources to carry out the planning. And so they are not hampered by the participation of the citizens. They have different problems with actually implementing their projects. There are some really good case studies on the honest and positive participation of the citizens in developing wind parks, for example, where things go really well. But more generally speaking, in Europe, we note that the participation of citizens is being more and more limited. In some countries, they were never really quite rolled out, and they will probably be more limited in future. Thanks very much. Would you like to add something, Raphael? Yes, just very briefly. In Germany, we also look very regularly at the right to bring collective action, but we feel that the situation is getting worse and worse. It's very costly to bring such collective action. It's 200,000 or 300,000 euros. It stretches over years and years, and that is why we hardly ever opt for that. We try to request the implementation of what we already have agreed. We have never really achieved the ending of a project. Once in Kerlich, they didn't build a nuclear power plant, but we have problems with the building, road building, for example, with a limit of speed, for example. We simply need to realize that we will have to bear some of the burdens, but that we also need to be able to bring proof. But if you involve the citizens at a very early planning stage, then you can avoid future problems. Thanks very much. I'd like to also call in Daniel and René on a different question that was voted up. And that's the question of differentiating between privately and publicly financed lobbying. Gisela Brinkmann asks why the NGOs may no longer be publicly funded, whereas the industrial lobbyists don't face that restriction and the problem. The EU Commission would disperse the funds, and perhaps there should be an independent authority that handles it. And that could probably be quite positive even for the industrial lobbyists. Could we perhaps come back to the question of private and public funding? And can you envisage improvements in that area? Daniel or René? Well, I'll start, and then Daniel can add. The question really targets the center of the debate. Why is the commercial lobby still authorized to be commercially funded? We have no access to the commercial funding. So if the policy would change and they would want to prohibit that, then they would probably only do that for some of the lobbyists who really misbehaved totally. But it's different if you use public funds, so the public authorities will also declare how you may use the public funds. And if I tell you to use it in such and such a way, you need to change your behavior. Perhaps it's just like the father who tells his son, as long as you put your feet under my table, you do as I say. And now we have a majority in the European Parliament where we can actually be faced with an increased influence on public spending. But you cannot, for example, impede a recognized association to take legal action. You may not do that. And that's why it's also cynical. It shows very clearly that those who bring the arguments don't want an even playing field for both sides. And that is why the argument in itself is ill-conceived? And does anything change if a different channel of funding will be used, a different fund set up, for example? I don't think so. It's just the political context. It's the far-right and right-wing political context. They are put off by the NGOs who warn them, who try to influence them to defend the general interest, and they don't want to be told that they are moving in the wrong direction. They really want to attack or combat the raison d'être. I don't think the proposal would really change things for the better. We could probably win some time, but regulating new access and the use of such public funds and the question of discharge in the European Parliament, I don't think these things would change in the final analysis. So I think it is very important to differentiate between the rights and entitlements that cannot be taken away from the associations. The justification is rather willful, but it works much better, supposedly, for NGOs. I think that is so true. The justification is willful. If conservatives talk about transparency, you have to look very closely, because very often they have a hidden agenda. If they were really talking about transparency, they would call for transparency for all organizations. They requested, however, only for the NGOs and not for think tanks and other lobby entities. And that in itself is ample proof of the fact that we're faced with a political attack. René, if you say that we should have equal, we should be on equal footing as to the use of our weapons, well, we're very far away from that. When I was still at Transparency International, we tried to find out from the lobby register what the proportion is. Industry spent six times as much money, and they had six times as many employees as the NGOs. It's always a nice try to work for an equal footing, but I think we would really have to spend a lot of money to achieve that. But even this percentage of 6-1, the relation of 6-1, proves to everyone that there's a very unequal distribution of strength and of power. And Nina referred to that. The Commission simply goes outside and buys itself some organizations that defend their views. I don't know how on earth the Conservatives can conceive such an argument. Do the NGOs or any organization receive funds from the Commission, and then they have to take a test on of their attitude by the European Commission in order to check whether they are fully aligned with the Commission President or some other agency of the Commission? That would be very awkward. The Commission goes outside and tells the NGOs to lobby 60 MEPs. I don't take it. I can't believe it. It's the other way around. The NGOs submit their requests for funds, and then the European Commission checks whether this is receivable. So I think there's some misunderstanding there somewhere about the functioning of funding. We'll come to our final round now, and you all get half a minute because we need to finish on time. And perhaps you remember how we started. We were talking about the question of what can we do concretely? What can people do very concretely and proactively if they want to do something about it? And we start with Patricia, and then we take the round, so Rafael, Nina. That's a real challenge. The first thing I would say is to talk about it. Talk with all the people you know. Use your contacts. Even in the EU bubble, we have many people who are totally unaware of the extent of this development. So talk about it. Talk to the media. To them, if they publish very solidly researched media reports, if you have good contacts to the media, please, please try to mobilize them to publish on the subject. And do talk to the members of parliament, also the conservative members of parliament. Just talk to them. From all the parties and try to convince them to do something. Thanks, Rafael. I would like to support that. We have the election campaign in full swing in Germany, and you will meet many of the candidates in your constituency. You should take the issue up with them, certainly with the conservative candidates. Candidates, and please explain to them that NGOs are not just the technical support association and others, but environmental associations also, and that it's very important to uphold the right to bring collective action. And I think it is important, and if you want to get inspired, please go to our website, NABU. Thanks very much, Nina.
Yeah, ich glaube, das ist jetzt gut, dass wir da alle ins gleiche Horn.
I think it's very good if we all work towards the same objective. I think it is also important to demystify the rhetoric of the conservative parties. It must be discussed in the general public. And it must be clarified what the reality is, at least the way that I perceive the reality. And to me, it is clear that NGOs are so important for a pluralistic society and democracy. I think that's really decisive. Thanks very much, Daniel. 3 points. Support the civil society. 3 NGOs are present here tonight. Do become a member and support them. You can also become a member of a party. No, we can offer you 2 here. Do cast your vote in the elections and do subscribe to our newsletters so that we can mobilize people who can help us writing to the members of parliament. I can hardly add anything. I'm from Baden-Württemberg, by the way, if you were interested or wondering. I think we can only do politics if the public supports it, more generally speaking. So everyone who joined the webinar or who will look at it later on YouTube should try to do something. Very often NGOs are portrayed as defending the wrong interests, but if we make clear that the rule of law is being questioned and that the citizens may no longer be able to participate in important political debates or be represented, then I think we can wake up people to do something, which is so important. Thank you very much. Wonderful. And I would also like to add something. We know what we want to do at Europe Calling. We unite many, many people. We will be forwarding the information about which we talked here today, and you will be able to follow us. We will also organize an emergency webinar on Wednesday about the situation in the United States. We want to invite people from the United States, and they all withdraw because the situation in the US is so dangerous and so unsafe that they don't want to join us in our webinars any longer because they don't feel safe. They have no idea whether they have to fear retaliation. So that's one thing. But do share our invites, and I will also post the EB newsletter for you, to which you can then subscribe. And I would also like to thank all our guest speakers. I would like to thank you for your huge interest, the over 1,000 participants, and I wish you well. See you hopefully on Wednesday.